Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. It's Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold with you as ever. And Jeff, there is so much that we can talk about in this soap opera that is the NFL.
Man, I have got an extra large cup of black coffee this morning because we got a lot we got to chop up, buddy. A lot. Who would have thought some of this stuff is going on?
I feel like, Jeff, I talked about a lot of Cam Newton over the weekend. Oh, I don't even want to get into the Miami Dolphins assistant coach. Should we just talk about the games? Might be easier.
Well, it'd be easier to talk about just the games, but it's just, you got to talk about it because it's so topical. I mean, you know, I don't know where you want to start. We can start with Chris Forster. That was beyond belief, really, to me. It was like beyond belief.
Mm. No, it's left the Dolphins in a bit of a hole. And yeah, that to me, Jeff, and then we'll kind of park that one and move on. When you watch something and you think, do you know what, that looks like something out of a film. It doesn't look like this could be real and this is actually going on in the NFL. And there it was. And you just think, wow, you know, like it is a soap opera. That team, sometimes the Dolphins, they don't kind of help themselves. You know, they're taking sort of, that's a hit. That's a hit to the Dolphins as an entire organization.
Well, it's one of the more selfish things I've ever seen. Mm. I mean, it's almost like I said, as I watched it, I didn't believe it was real at first. You know, it's like, no, that can't be. That's got to be some sort of, you know, joke or some sort. But then as you watch it and you saw his eyes, you realize what was really going on. Mm. And then to think it was in the facility, I mean, that is beyond, you know, it's beyond shock.
Especially with me. And it's a coach with 25 years experience, Jeff. He's been in the NFL a quarter of a century.
And a guy with great, is tremendously respected for his ability to coach offensive linemen in the NFL. He's this, I believe, the second highest paid assistant coach in the NFL. He makes over $2 million. And, I understand it's a human issue. It's not an NFL issue.
Sure.
Because those kinds of things go on in every profession. But it just is absolutely shocking to me that inside of, you know, if it was a weekend in the off season or on a bye week and, you know, he made a bad mistake, you know, and he was out in Vegas or whatever, I could, you know, somehow I could process it easier. But to think that he was on his way to a staff meeting.
And boasting about it. And that
went on. Yeah. And boasting about it. Exactly. Shocks me. And the guy that that I felt bad for in the deal, because if you're that, you know, if you're that selfish, dumb, whatever you want to say, then you deserve exactly what you get. But how about young Adam Gase? You know, you say three lightning bolts per season you're going to have to deal with. Per year you're going to have to deal with.
You don't expect that one.
He's in the middle of a lightning storm right now. I mean, you go, you know, you have abbreviated training camp. You go through a hurricane, you go through practicing, you know, all the way across the country, away from, you know, everything that you know, your facilities, everything. Then you go to London, then you come back, then you don't play well, then you know, Lawrence Timmons disappears on you. I mean, holy Toledo, lose your quarterback in preseason. I mean, golly. Mm. I really feel bad for Adam and his staff, but, you know, this is, you know, again, they're going to have to find themselves. They're going to go out and apparently hire another guy. But, you know, who that's going to be is anybody's guess. And then what that transformation can look like.
Yeah, another guy who found himself in the middle of a storm, of course, Jeff, was Cam Newton. He created the storm himself, answering questions from Jordan Rodrigue of the Charlotte Observer. She was talking about routes. Cam found the whole thing highly amusing that a lady could ask questions about football. And off we went. The controversy was there and it was stirred up. And then in the first half of Thursday Night Football last week, Cam issues an apology. Jeff, We'll get your take on it in a second. I said this on Sky Sports on Sunday night. I'm not buying it. He made the apology after he'd lost one of his big sponsorship deals. Then, because he made the apology, three other sponsors said they were going to stay with him. I felt he delivered it beautifully. It looked sincere. It looked heartfelt. I bet there was an auto cue. I bet it was written for him. He was influenced by his agents, by the PR staff of the Panthers. The old cynic in me wasn't buying it. I just feel like it was his opportunity to control the message, because then when it got to Sunday, he was able to say, I spoke about that on Thursday, that's behind me. The whole thing was unsavory. I don't think just coming out and saying sorry makes everything all right. You still said it.
Well, I think you probably appreciate that way better than most people do, because, you know, obviously from your time working in that aspect of the game for NFL Europe, you recognize, you know, how that works. You know, the process of spin doctoring or you know, damage control or whatever, you know, whatever you talk about. And you're exactly right. I got the sense, you know, as I watched it, you know, my sense was he was more angry that he had to do it than he was, you know, recalcitrant about, you know, the fact that he had made a mistake. I think he probably still doesn't feel like he made a mistake. But I'm going to tell you something. I watched something. Yeah, every once in a while you find a little humor that makes us realize that we shouldn't take ourselves all that serious. Somebody sent something, and I don't even know if it was Twitter or how I saw it, but it was this little girl, and I mean, she must have been 4 or 5 years old, and she goes, listen, Cameron Newton, and then she holds up a picture of a curl route, then she holds up a picture of a comeback route, then she holds up a picture, and it was about, you know, girls do know about routes, and girls do know about football, and I thought it was just the cutest little way to stick the needle in and you know, take a little jab at it, because it was really well done. And you know, gosh, when you're the face of the franchise, you know, when you are the guy, and, you know, especially that franchise, and Mr. Richardson, you know, such a good guy and so, you know, really a conservative, really family values, and I didn't take it when I saw it. I thought it was kind of like he was just being dismissive. I didn't think he was being like, didn't attack her, but, you know, I'm thinking, I'm hearing him say it and I'm going, boy, you better be really careful because you're treading on some thin ice right now. And he just didn't seem to get it. And then usually that's what it takes, you know, you got to lose a sponsor, you got to lose some money, or you got to lose, you know, you got to lose something before you figure out, well, maybe that wasn't a very smart thing to say.
I think if he apologizes just unreservedly as well, Jeff, then that goes a little bit further than he opened his apology by saying, if you took offense, then I apologize. In other words, almost suggesting that you maybe shouldn't have taken offense, but if you did, then I'm sorry. So, I just think it's another example, Jeff. We've seen it before, though. We saw him, he answered a question to a female reporter a couple of years back and said something like, I'm going to put that question in a box, sweetheart. And, you know, it's not just about, you know, how he deals with female reporters either. The way he dealt with that loss in Super Bowl 50 was not what, and you just said it there, he's the face of the franchise. Luke Kuechly had to be the one to stand up and face all of the kind of questions about where it went wrong. It wasn't Cam Newton.
Yeah, and again, that's not the way it's designed. You know, when you're the highest paid guy, when you're the quarterback, when you're truly the face of the franchise, then you should be the guy. It shouldn't be Ron Rivera, you know, again, one more time, trying to explain your behaviors to, you know, to the media, which, again, it's tough enough being a head football coach, you know, without having to, you know, explain why your, you know, why your starting quarterback in the face of your franchise can't handle himself properly in the media.
You always talk about how...
You know, he certainly had, and I think you could, I think it would be good for you to, again, just for the listeners, just to talk about how they've worked with him since his rookie year to try and help him be better.
Yeah, it was after that incident where he called a reporter sweetheart, and they basically made him kind of sit down and watch all of his press conferences and almost graded his press conferences and worked on areas within that. So like you'd watch game film, they did the same thing with press conferences, and that often happens if a PR team feel like somebody needs help. I know our friend Jim Tomsula, they did the same thing in San Francisco. They sat and they graded all of his first few PR appearances because it is important. It's a perception business as well. It's about how you come across, especially in that position as a head coach or a quarterback. And as you said, Jeff, I think you've said this on many different issues around a franchise. It can be whatever the topic is, but you kind of drop a stone into that pool of controversy and the ripples spread outwards, because you could even point a finger at Ron Rivera now. Ron Rivera last year benched Cam Newton in Sunday Night Football against Seattle for the first series because he didn't wear a tie on the team plane. There was no discipline for Cam Newton in Detroit this week. Those are the kind of questions that come up when Cam Newton creates a firestorm in Carolina. Whether they're right or wrong, suddenly Ron Rivera finds himself in the spotlight as well.
Well, yeah, and it reflects on everybody. And that's the thing that you've got to get, and that a lot of times these guys don't get because it's all about them too much. And that, you know, that reflects on everybody in that Panther organization and everybody in that Panther locker room. And, you know, and that's too bad, because what you want is your play on the field and what you do off the field, because he does some great things off the field.
Yes.
I mean,
agreed.
He really does do some great things off the field, but all of that gets lost when you make a comment that you really, really should know a lot. Even if that's how you feel in your heart, you just can't make that comment. You can make it maybe when you're done and retired and it's just you, but it's never in a team sport like football, it's never just you. Your behaviors, your actions, your words, it's never just you. It's the entire organization that you reflect.
All right, let's move on to week 5 in the NFL. Look back at that. We'll make our picks for week 6 as well a little bit later on in our show here on Inside the Huddle. But we'll go back to week 5. And, Jeff, there were just a bunch of close games. I mean, it was another fantastic week. We've had a few weeks now. It feels like the teams are getting up to speed. Maybe the in-season, preseason, if you will, has got some of these teams up to speed. We had 9 300-yard passing days over the weekend. We had just headline after headline. Just as we set the scene, though, Jeff, 5 weeks in, what's your take on this season? To me, it feels like it's more wide open than ever. What do you think? I mean, do we have clear front runners? I don't know we do. What do you think?
Well, I think we've eliminated some.
Right.
You can take the clear front runner title off of the Patriots. You can take the clear front runner title off Steelers. You can take it off the Seahawks. You can take it off of the Cardinals. A lot of the teams, the Raiders, teams that we thought were going to be, you know, cruising at this point in the season and really starting to establish themselves as the upper crust of the league. Well, shoot, I mean, right now, you can't, in my mind, you can't pick a team because every week somebody rises up and plays better or beats somebody. So I think it's going to be one of the great years in the history of the NFL in terms of, you know, I'm going to use the Mr. Tagliabue's word, parity. The parity in the league is like it's never been. And I think that there have been some unbelievable surprises in the league. Now, I'm going to tell you, Neil, I want to spend some time talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars right now.
Yep.
Because that is a football team that has gone, hadn't done it in their stadium, but did it in England and did it in Pittsburgh, taken two of the most physical teams in the National Football League, historically two of the most physical teams in the National Football League, and just gave them both a beating. I mean, a physical beating. Dominated them on all sides of the ball. That defense is so fast and so opportunistic. And in that game against the Steelers, Neil, they did not throw a forward pass past 8:32 of the third quarter.
Yeah.
18 straight runs to finish the game against the Steelers.
Jeff, here's the numbers that I think stand out to me. Obviously, I want to talk about Big Ben and the interceptions in a second and that Jacksonville defense. But on offense, Blake Bortles threw 14 passes all day, Jeff, and he completed 8 of them. Leonard Fournette, by contrast, had 28 runs. So it's clear where Jacksonville are kind of loading up their offensive strength. Now, we could argue, we can sit here and say, well, that's, you know, that's not long-term sustainable, and they're not necessarily going to, you know, be in a good position if they need to lean on Bortles. That's an argument maybe that could be made and had. But it's clear that, like you said, they're physically taking control of games. I would wonder, you know, whether you'd want a bit more balance. But then we did see Bortles do it through the air at Wembley. So, you know, you're really nitpicking if you're kind of splitting apart and saying they didn't throw it enough. But they certainly took charge physically against the Steelers.
Well, I think the football coach in me tells me that to heck with balance. When you can run the ball, when you can run the ball, not when they give you the run, but when you want to run it, and there's a big difference between those two things.
It's the safest way to move it, right, Jeff?
Anybody in the National Football League can run the ball. You give them a five-man box, and you know they're going to run the football against you because they got the numbers. But the Steelers knew that the only thing the Jaguars could do at the end, or the only thing they wanted to do at the end, was run the football. They got into a 9-man front on that long run at the end. And I'm telling you, Jacksonville blocked. And like Mercedes Lewis, who, in my opinion, one of the things that I didn't like about him when he came out of UCLA is I didn't think he was a great inline blocker. Well, let me tell you something. He did a great job in that game blocking on the edge. They toughened those guys up. Now, that's not easy to do. I'm going to tell people right now, that is not easy to do with pro football players. A guy who isn't physical, it's really difficult to instill that in a guy. But you look at that football team, and that offensive line just pounded. This is Hayward, and this is Watt, and this is Kazir, and these are good. Molly Putt's defensive line. These guys are freaking some of the best in the league, and the Steelers have 8 first-round draft choices up there.
So, Jeff,
they got their butts beat.
Yeah. Do you think that's a case of Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin? They saw that they could impose their will on the Steelers, and if you are imposing your will on a team and running it well, you stick with the run because, you know, there's that old saying about, you know, three things can happen when you throw and 2 of them are bad. That's not always the case with the run. Or should we be looking and saying, well, this is an indictment of Blake Bortles? Or do you think that it's just because they were running so well? And we still don't know whether Bortles could be the long-term answer in this kind of attack.
Well, let me just go back to one of our favorite guys, and I'm going to do an impression of him, right? And I hope you'll get what I'm saying. Herman Edwards once said in a press conference, you play to win the game, right? So what were they doing? They were playing to win.
Yeah.
They were playing to win the game. Who cares how many times a quarterback throws the ball? The guys that care about that kind of stuff are usually the guys that have great statistics, the offensive coordinators that are trying to get their next head job, right? That's what I see in Jacksonville. I see a toughness that goes all the way through that football team. You know, Neil, one of the things I truly, truly, truly believe about this game is if you watch a team, special teams play, you'll get a real clear picture of who that team is, much clearer than if you watch an offensive side of film or defensive side of film.
Yeah.
Because that's all sides of the team playing. And when you watch Jacksonville's special teams, they're physical, they're fast, they're just exactly what they are on offense and defense. And so I think that team right now, and this is a big statement, but I'm looking in that division and I'm saying, show me a team right now that's playing better complementary football.
No,
show me a team right now that as it gets into the time when it's starting, it's not going to get cold in Jacksonville, but they're going to have to play on the road in the cold. And weather becomes a factor.
They're built for that, Jeff.
They're going to run the ball. What's that? Yeah, exactly.
They're built for that. My worry, Jeff, is that they are They are exciting. They tantalize you, but they did it in week one. They didn't do it in week two. They did it in week three. They didn't do it in week four. They did it in week five. Now come back and show me you can do it in week six and then week seven and eight. You know, let's find that consistency. Then I'm on board, because they are showing flashes of being really exciting, especially on defense. And let's talk about the defense, and let's talk about the impact on Big Ben, Jeff, because Big Ben Roethlisberger, five interceptions. You probably saw his post-match locker room stuff. We showed it on Sky Sports on Sunday night. Shocking. You know, made you sit up and say, wow, when a starting quarterback of that caliber says, maybe I don't have it anymore, that means you've been beaten down over the previous 3 hours.
Yeah, and you know, for him to say that was alarming, really. I mean, it was truly alarming. And you know, that one, I wonder how that one's going to be received in the locker room by Brown and Bryant and Le'Veon Bell and those offensive linemen, because that's your guy. I mean, let me tell you something, Steelers fans. As soon as you don't have Big Ben anymore, and I know he threw five this past weekend, but he's the best chance you got, because those backups they got, they ain't gonna win with those guys.
No.
And so the Steelers are looking at, and I think this is where there's alarm in Steeler Nation, if they really look at it closely, that as soon as they lose Big Ben, they're not going to be in a position to draft the guy unless they trade up and do all kinds of things to get a guy. And that's a learning process. We saw it last night with Trubisky.
Mm.
You know? So we saw it with Goff. You see it with every single one of them, right? And if you're the Steelers right now, if they don't get better play at quarterback, and they're not going to go very far in the playoffs. And what happens after he's not there? Because I'm telling you, the two guys that they got as backups are not good enough. And that means that Super Bowl window is going to close real fast. Cardinals are going through the same thing right now.
Exactly, Jeff. And there are teams around the NFL where, because they have a veteran quarterback in place, they haven't got the guts to go and draft another one in the first round. I mean, we can criticize Kansas City for, you know, putting pressure on Alex Smith, but when Alex Smith, and say it's 3 years, 4 years, they may have Pat Mahomes ready by their, you know, and they may have their succession plan. There is no succession plan in New Orleans behind Drew Brees. There is no succession plan behind Big Ben in Pittsburgh. Carson Palmer, you just mentioned it, in Arizona. It's the same with Philip Rivers in Los Angeles. When you've got a franchise quarterback, it takes a lot of guts to go and stick another one in the wings, and none of those teams have it, and especially the Steelers.
And when you don't have it and you lose that guy, whether you lose him to injury, which is a reality of the game, we saw it again last night, and then you got to come to a backup. Well, that backup better be ready, and he better be good enough to get you there and, you know, win games for you, because there are very few teams anymore that are so dominant on the other side of the ball that, you know, we can watch another 2001 Ravens team. You know, I mean, that just doesn't happen very much anymore. Although, let's go back and talk about the Jets. Let me tell you something. That might be a defense that's on the come to be one of the great defenses again, if they can hold those guys together, because they've done a great job up front of getting impact guys. And Calais Campbell continues, Neil, to play at an incredibly high level. And
linebackers run like receivers.
What? Oh, shoot. And you watch Malik Jackson, how disruptive he can be, and Jalen Ramsey can play on the corner, and I'm not using that term, shut down corner, but I'm saying he's one of the top corners in the league. The safeties go after, attack the ball. You know, I mean, they got Bouye, they got edge rushers, Fowler, you see why they drafted him in the first round. You know, Miles Jack can fly, plus Lesney gives you that physical pounder inside. I'm telling you, that is a good defense, and people around the NFL better start to wake up. Because when you start talking about some of the best defenses in the league, Jacksonville's a place you got to start talking about.
They have to be in there. And to reemphasize Jeff's point, Big Ben threw 55 passes, Blake Bortles threw 14, and Blake Bortles flew home as the winner. One last thing on this game, Jeff. I was listening to quite a lot of American radio over the weekend. Back into last week, actually, this kind of narrative emerged, and it certainly continued after week five, that maybe Big Ben's heart isn't in it anymore. He was talking about retiring in the off season, and When he signed his last contract with the Steelers, Jeff, he got a $31 million signing bonus. He's only played 2 years of the five-year deal, so he would have to hand back three-fifths of that signing bonus. You know, around $18 million, he would have to write a check back to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm not sure that's the reason why he came back, but obviously retirement is kind of mulling around in his head. And he just doesn't look the same player. I mean, the deep ball was one of his specialities, and that especially hasn't been there this year.
Yeah, and you know what I saw during the course of the game, Neil, and this is really interesting for me as I watch him now this coming week. At the end of the game, he started steering the ball instead of throwing the ball. And you understand what I mean? I mean, he was so conscious of throwing interceptions that he was, you can see it in his mechanics. It's what would, it basically is like he was babying the ball.
Right, gotcha.
He didn't want to cut one loose, yep. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be interesting to see how he handles that. I think you make a great point. When a player, and, you know, again, 20-some years in pro football, I think I can say this with some conviction. When a player begins to question whether he wants to play, he's already decided he doesn't want to play.
Yeah.
I've just seen it too many times. And when you get that 1 foot out, you should take both feet out. Now, I'm not saying he's got 1 foot out. And what he may have done, he may have fooled us all. I mean, he may have fooled us all in the press conference and taken and put all that on himself to take it off the rest of the team. So, and which, again, I've seen coaches do. Buddy Ryan was famous for it. Right? Jerry would do it. He makes some statement in a press conference. So that's what becomes the focal point the next week, not everything else. Take the pressure off your football team. Because what I did like in the press conference, he rebounded, and when they said, what's it going to take for this offense to, you know, be as good as it should be, and he goes, I have to play better.
Yeah.
He put it, you know, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. So he was a leader. He was the face of a franchise.
Yeah, exactly. He could shelter his teammates from it and take it on himself. And that may be why he said what he said. And it'll be interesting to see if, again, you'd love to be that fly on the wall in the offensive meeting room or the team meeting room where, to see if he didn't stand up today and go, you know, hey, fellas, I just want you to know what I said. I said for this reason. I'm with you. Because here's what will happen, Neil. If they begin to question whether he really is committed to playing and really thinks that he's, you know, if they think he has confidence issues, that'll spread like wildfire inside that team.
Let's move on to the Packers and Cowboys, Jeff. And we're not going to chat about every game here. We never do on Inside the Huddle. But what a game. Possibly the game of the season. Well, I think it was the game of the season so far. And, Jeff, we were sat in the studio, and I'm sure you were doing the same. We were watching as Dak Prescott sprinted into the end zone, and then he starts his little dance of celebration. And the very first thing I did was glance at the clock. And I was like, 1 minute and 13 seconds? He didn't even need that. 1 minute and 2 seconds to go 75 yards in 9 plays. The numbers weren't spectacular by the end of the day for Aaron Rodgers, but it was a vintage Aaron Rodgers performance, especially right at the end of the game. It was a classic, this one.
Well, I thought, you know what, give certainly the Packer offensive staff great credit for that last drive. You know, they ran the ball one time and it gashed them. Right? Got the first down, which stopped the clock, which nobody expected. You know, they had an empty box and a five-man box, and they hit him with a run to start the thing off. They threw the ball on the edges. Guys did a great job of getting out of bounds. Then Rodgers scrambles around and recognizes that he can, you know, he gets as much as he can get. And then it was kind of interesting to me, Neil, you know, how he kind of, like, as much as he could, went after the DB as he started to run out of bounds. You know, he kind of half lowered his shoulder a little bit at the guy, which is an indication of what to you?
That, well, just...
Guys are Yeah, he's a competitor.
He's confident, competitor, yeah.
He ain't thinking about a field goal. Other quarterbacks and coaches would be thinking about a field goal. He's thinking about, how do we get this thing over with, right? And then they go down, and, heck on it, you know, they build trips, and put Devontae Adams on the backside, and they go after a rookie because they know the Cowboys are going to play that too high shell, right?
Mm.
So they throw one ball, and the kid knocks it away. The rookie knocks it away, right?
And Jordan Lewis, yeah.
And what do they do?
Well, that's what I loved about it, Jeff. That's what I loved about the coolness, and that's just Aaron Rodgers all over. When the lights are at their brightest and some quarterbacks go like a rabbit in the headlights, he's cool as a cucumber. And he's literally, he's like, almost as if he went to Devontae Adams and said, well, that one didn't quite work out. Let's run that play again. Let me show you how I meant to throw it.
And then you watch what he did. Like, I'm watching it, and I really wish I had been in the studio with you guys because it was such an unbelievable job. He's got the safety on the hash, right? And they've got trips to the field, and Devontae's back there. Now, in my mind, I'm thinking if somebody's going to beat me in this situation, there's two guys I can't let beat. I'm not going to let Rodgers scramble around and make a play, and I'm not going to let Devontae Adams beat me. If you don't beat me, you're going to beat me with somebody else, right? Mm. On that backside single. But he took the snap, and his eyes went right to the safety. And he froze the safety enough because he knew what he had on the single, right? He froze the safety enough that there was no way the safety was going to be any kind of help on the backside.
Right.
And so that corner is out there all alone. There is no help anywhere. And Adams did a great job of sticking him inside and then fading. And where did Rodgers put the ball? He stuck it right over the top of the DB's head so that he could never see it. And, you know, we talk about throwing the DB blind.
Mm-hmm.
He did a great job because there's no way that young kid could get his head back fast enough to see the ball. And Devontae just went up and took it away from him. And I thought to myself, that is unbelievable throw and play.
Yeah, and Rodgers knows that the first one, he threw it in there too low. And if Jordan Lewis gets his head around, maybe he's got a shot at intercepting that one. The second one was, like you say, on that classic throw, you know, that old classic phrase that you coaches use time, you know, it's either your guy's going to catch it or it's flying out of bounds. And that was just what that was. It was inch perfect from Rodgers.
Yeah, and you know what? It just, to me, it was like, if you wanted to take a segment for a quarterback, for a young quarterback to watch, that was a tremendous segment for a young quarterback to watch. That drive, he was never flustered. He was, as a matter of fact, when I don't know if you caught this, Neil, but on the footage that I was watching from on the sideline, as soon as Dak scored, it was like he was, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. We're going to go win this thing.
Yeah, didn't throw his helmet down and, oh, no, they've scored.
No, there was none of that. I mean, it was like, okay, let's go. Mm. And then it was like he was in total control of the biggest moment of the game. And that's what the great ones are.
Yeah.
That's what the great ones do.
You talk about throwing platforms as well. There was a throw, and I think it was probably only about a 10-yard gain, but it set up one of the Green Bay touchdowns. But it was in the second half, and he's rolling to his left, and he ends up backing away from the pass rush. So he's backing away to his left, throwing off his back foot, Jeff, and then he throws to Aaron Jones out the backfield, who makes a diving catch. But as Rodgers throws, backing away to his left, off his back foot, he almost kind of pulls the ball as well. So he's kind of pulling the ball as he's throwing. So the ball ends up to the outside where only his guy can catch it again. And you just think, pure thrower, you're a genius. You're an absolute football genius.
Well, I think, you know, this could be a whole podcast to talk about who's the greatest.
Yeah.
But when you see him make plays like that you just described, and plays like when he rolled to his left against the Cowboys last year in the playoff and threw that dime right on the sideline, that's why there's a strong argument for him to be the greatest right now because he can do some things athletically that Tom Brady or any of the other guys that are in the conversation about who's the greatest quarterback in the NFL, they just don't make those throws.
Mm.
I mean, Matthew Stafford probably can make some of those plays, but, you know, Brady can't. he can't work from an unclean pocket as well as those two guys can. And, you know, his accuracy with bad throwing angles and bad platforms is, it's uncanny. It really is uncanny.
Jeff, there are certain players around the league who will look at it big picture, and then they'll factor in the Super Bowls that Brady has won, and quite rightly. You know, you talk to Big Ben about it, and Big Ben told me emphatically Brady's the greatest of all time because he's got the Super Bowls and it's about winning championships. But if I talk to a lot of defenders around the NFL, and I've talked to a lot, Jeff, over the recent years, and certainly during Aaron Rodgers' heyday, if it comes to who are you asking me to defend down after down after down, the player's choice, for the most part, it has been Aaron Rodgers when I've asked that question.
Yeah, and you know, I think that when you look at it, it's so much gets weighed on whether the guy wins a Super Bowl or not. And I just think that is so absolutely incredibly unfair. And
yeah, because it's Trent Dilfer for one, Dan Marino nil.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, you talk about, you know, Brad Johnson won. You know, I mean, there's been
Dan Fouts
nil. Yeah, I mean, come on, man. I mean, seriously. And I think maybe sometimes we get too caught up in all of that stuff instead of really just enjoying the genius that he is. I mean, the football genius that he is. Not genius in terms of football IQ, it certainly got that, but just the genius that he plays with. Just the unbridled passion and the control and all of those things. If you're in Packerland, right, and you've been a Packer fan for a lot of years, you've been really blessed to see some guys that could really improvise and just make things happen on their own and were great competitors. Sadly, a guy named Dan Majkowski, the Magic Man, who preceded Favre, was much like that. He just got beat up and got injured and couldn't, you know, never had the career that a lot of people have. Then you get Favre, and now you got Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you're pretty spoiled up in Wisconsin for quarterback play.
Yes, you absolutely are. We could do a 3-hour show today, Jeff, to be honest, but I'm just going to rattle through a couple of other quick headlines because I want to talk to you about the Browns and the situation that they've got going on now. They've off to another winless start, so they're what now, 0-5 on the season. Yes, it is 5 weeks in for the Cleveland Browns, no bye for them, so 0-5. Obviously, we could talk about the injuries of Odell Beckham Jr. and J.J. Watt. Those obviously hurt. Cam Newton was outstanding on the field in the win, 27-24 over the Detroit Lions. The Giants are 0-5 on the season. The Seahawks got a big win in Los Angeles, and the Chiefs remained undefeated. But I just want to, because we're trying to broaden this out from just the games and talk big picture and state of where some teams are. Jeff, the Cleveland Browns, they benched DeShone Kizer on Sunday in their loss to the New York Jets. We spoke to Peter King after the game on Skype in the studios. He felt that that was just a move to try and win that game against the Jets. And I'll be watching very closely to see what the Browns do with Kizer, because this is a team, and I mentioned this on Sunday night, you could probably give them a pass on Derek Carr and Dak Prescott because everyone in the NFL passed on those guys, but they could have had either of those quarterbacks. They didn't want Carson Wentz, if you remember, and they traded out of that position last year. They had a shot at Deshaun Watson. So basically, they keep kicking these draft picks down the road, Jeff. They keep stockpiling draft picks, and they're not winning games. They're 0-5. Hugh Jackson has won one of his last 26 games as an NFL head coach. I like to believe the Moneyball stuff, but I don't know. At some point, you've got to win football games. And if you're now benching the quarterback that you've picked ahead of those ones I just mentioned, I mean, you can see why Browns fans are going to be relatively concerned. What's your thoughts generally on the Browns, or do we need to stay patient, or should we hit the alarm, panic alarm?
Well, the football guy in me says stay patient, right? Yeah. Because you got a plan, stick to the plan. It's going to never easy. The only thing you're guaranteed in pro football is adversity. That's the one thing you can sure you're going to get. But they've had boatloads of it. And, you know, they get Myles Garrett back, and he makes an immediate impact, but it's still not enough to win a game. And that's, again, like Herman said, you play to win the game. You don't play for better draft position. You play to win the game. Mm. At some point, they've got to start to see that, to see the fruits of the plan, right?
Yeah.
I think if you're sitting in Cleveland, what gives you hope and what drives you to stay with the plan is just look at Jacksonville.
Right.
Because, you know, and it may be like it was in Jacksonville. It may be that Hugh will have to be the guy that, you know,
starts the process.
I guess captain the ship through the worst waters, and somebody else gets to sail it into port. But that may be the case because, you know, if Jacksonville had, you know, gone all over the map, you know, they would have probably still been in that same scenario. But they've got what appears to be the right combination. Now, they went through the tough times. They drafted well. They went through the injuries, the top draft pick. They went through the, you know, developmental curve with young players. And now they're starting to see the fruits of their labor. I just think that Cleveland was so bad, and I mean so bad, for so long that, you know, there's that stigma that's hanging over them right now, which frankly Jacksonville has. Mm. And until you win a few games, it's gonna continue to be that way.
Jeff, I'm just before we move on and make our picks, I'm frantically trying to look, because I can't remember off the top of my head how many years J.J. Watt has been in the NFL. Because what's it, about 6, 7? I'm gonna guess. Let me have a look.
I would say 7 or 8 probably.
Yeah, he's in his 7th season. Have we seen the best of J.J. Watt?
I'm afraid so, partner. Yeah. I'm afraid so. Just. And I think that, you know, I'm saying this hoping that I'm wrong.
Yeah, me too.
But when I see the accumulation of all that pounding, and the he plays the game as if, you know, as a coach, you say, play as if it's your last play. Well, he's one of the very, very few that I think does that on a consistent basis. And it's starting to show up. It's starting to take a toll on his body. And you know, this broken bone in his leg now, the back injury, the back surgeries, you know, the elbow surgery, all of the things. You know, those things take a toll on you. And I just, you know, you look at how he was playing, frankly, even before the injury, Neil. There were plays that he was not making that he had made previously. You know, you saw early in the season a couple sacks got away from him that, you know, you say that's not J.J. Watt missing that quarterback. But the game and Father Time take their toll. And I think 7 years in as a defensive lineman, what you would hope is this would be the absolute pinnacle of his career right now. But I think those injuries have really, really, really set him back.
All right, let's make our picks for week 6 in the NFL. Then we've got a good one starting us off on Thursday night, Jeff. Philadelphia at Carolina. I like what I've seen out of Carson Wentz. I'm actually going to go Philadelphia to win on the road. Who do you like?
I'm going to take Philadelphia.
Okay. Let's have a move on to Sunday. Your son won't be talking to you now, Jeff. Sunday, the Miami Dolphins at Atlanta. I don't like Miami's offense, where it's going at the moment. They don't keep pace with the Falcons, especially in Atlanta. What do you reckon?
Too much turmoil, too little offense in Miami. I'm going to take the Falcons.
All right, both going Falcons to win that one. Chicago at Baltimore. So did you see Mitchell Trubisky, Jeff, on Monday night? What did you think?
Watched it. Saw exactly what I thought I'd see. A young quarterback that shows he can, you know, make some throws and is exciting, is dynamic. I think he's no question he's the future for the Bears. But, again, he's still a rookie and does make rookie mistakes. So, you know, I think the Bears are – I thought John Fox did as much as he could do to win that game. Mm-hmm. Fakes a punt, you know, reverses on the goal line for 2-point conversions. I mean, they coached as if it was the Super Bowl. They coached it, like, their butt off. But they're just not good enough right now.
All right, I'm going to go Baltimore, you?
Yep.
All right, moving on to Cleveland at Houston. So Cleveland can watch what might have been. Deshaun Watson's thrown 8 touchdown passes the last 2 games. This game is in Houston. I'm picking the Texans.
I'm going to take the Texans, and I agree with you, Neil. I think this is going to be Cleveland fans are going to really, really come away from this one going, we could have had that guy, and we got this guy.
that's what I'm saying. Green Bay at Minnesota. So Aaron Rodgers and the Packers are 4-1. The Vikings are now 3-2 on the season. This is a big one in the North, Jeff.
You know what? Here I go.
Do it, Jeff.
I'm taking the Vikings. I'll regret it, but I'm taking the Vikings.
Oh, see, now I can't be mean to Kyle Rudolph and Harrison Smith, can I?
Yeah, our Notre Dame boys showed up good last night in Chicago, 80 miles from where they went to college, and they were making plays.
All right, I'm going Green Bay. Just don't tell them I said. Detroit at New Orleans. So the Saints have come off their bye week. Excuse me,
Neil. I got a call from Kyle Rudolph right now. I'll be right. I'll be just a second.
No, you're not on the phone to Kyle Rudolph. Stop it. Stop it. I don't want to be in trouble early. I'll be in big trouble if I'm picking a fight with Kyle Rudolph. Detroit and New Orleans. Saints have won two in a row, but I like Matthew Stafford and the Lions to win this one on the road. What do you reckon, Jeff?
Yeah, I do. I think the Saints defense is just the remedy that the Lions offense needs.
All right. New England, both going Detroit in that one. New England at the New York Jets. Jets always play the Patriots tough, and the Jets are 3-2, which is not bad for a tire fire. So I'm still going to pick New England to win on the road.
I think that New England's going to win, but I think those Jets, those feisty Jets, are going to make it tough on Tom Brady.
They certainly will. San Francisco at Washington. 49ers, Jeff, have lost so many close games. I say they lose this one because they will fall to the man who is quarterback in them next year, Kirk Cousins. So I'm going to pick Washington to win.
Ooh, that's how you heard it here first, didn't it, Neil? Okay. You got inside information from Cousins. I know you do. I'm taking Washington.
Both going Washington to win that one. Tampa Bay at Arizona. So the Bucs have been kind of up and down. Arizona have been frustrated. Offensive line's getting Carson Palmer beaten up, though, Jeff. I'm picking Tampa Bay to win on the road.
I'm taking Tampa Bay, too, because how about this statistic? With all those great DBs they got, they are the worst in the league at giving up explosive plays. And it's hard for me to do it because I thought Tampa Bay was going to wear their throwback unis last week. I tweeted out a picture of their beautiful throwback, not the greatest uniform in the history of the National Football League, those throwback Tampa Bay orange unis. So it hurts me to say it, but I'm going to have to take the Bucs.
This is a good game with two feel-good teams, the Rams at Jacksonville. And it's a tough one to pick, Jeff, because the Rams lost last week to Seattle, but they turned the ball over five times. And if Cooper Kupp catches a pass in the end zone in the final minute, they win against Seattle. And we know Jacksonville are kind of up and down. The game's in Jacksonville. I'm going to pick the Jags to be more consistent and get this job done. But tough one to call. Who do you like, Rams or Jags?
Well, I'm going to say that Wade will have a better plan against Jacksonville than the Steelers did. And I really think Aaron Donald, he's starting to talk about guys playing now. He didn't have any training camp. Mm. Now you can see him starting to really become a factor in that defensive line in Los Angeles. So I'm going to take the Rams.
All right, you're going Rams, I'm going Jags. Pittsburgh at Kansas City. How does Big Ben respond at Arrowhead? I love what Andy Reid's doing, Jeff, with this team. Not only getting the best out of Alex Smith, but they're just so creative, Kansas City. And I feel like they come up with different looks, different plays. And I thought John Gruden, I watched back the game against Washington from last week, and John Gruden kind of hit the nail on the head with this team. He said a lot of their plays start out looking the same, but they certainly end up a lot different. And that's the whole point of coaching, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think they've done that, to be honest with you, I think all over the field. I'm talking about Dave Tobe on special teams, Bobby Sutton on defense, and Andy on offense. I think they've done the best overall coaching job in the league so far. You look at guys like Frank Zombo and Sorensen on defense. They're getting plays out of those guys that, those guys are basically special teams players, to be real honest with you. But they've become impact guys because they play well in that system, and you know, Justin Houston on defense, and you know, I just think they got one of the top young corners in the league. They're a good football team, a good football team. So I'm going to take Kansas City.
All right, I'm going to go Kansas City as well. The Chargers are at Oakland. Thankfully, this game isn't reversed and being played in LA, because there would not be a single Chargers fan in their home stadium for this one. But it's in Oakland. Jack Del Rio thinks that Derek Carr will be back. That's important, but he's got to get some help from some of the people around him. Jeff, do you know that Amari Cooper, in the last three games for the Raiders, all losses, has a total of 4 catches for 23 yards and no touchdowns? That's a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, that's alarming, because not only first-round draft picks, that's a talented, talented guy. And you got to find ways. You got to be creative and find ways to get the ball in his hand. I just really think if the Raiders don't have Derek Carr, they're not going to win.
Mm.
So I'll take Jack's word for it that he's going to play.
Yeah.
And if he does play, I think they'll win. If he doesn't play, I think San Diego will win.
All right, we'll give you that that one to Oakland for now then. Sunday Night Football is the New York Giants at Denver. So, Jeff, as you know, I watched a lot of youth American football here in Great Britain over the summer. There's a rule that if your team goes up and scores 30, if you score 30 points in the first half, they just play a running clock in the second half. I'm going to suggest this in Denver on Sunday night, because I think the Giants will be crying uncle early and often. Odell Beckham is out. Brandon Marshall looks like he's out for the season as well. I don't see him keeping this one close.
Well, there is no mercy rule in the NFL now, so this one will be one that you don't have to worry about getting to work on time on Monday, because you'll click it off about middle of the second quarter.
Yeah.
And say, I'm going to bed, I can't watch any more of this, and get your sleep. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think Denver will pound them.
All right, I think it's Denver. But at about 1:05 on Monday morning on Sky Sports, I will be telling you all, stick with us for Sunday Night Football. Don't go anywhere. It's going to be a classic from Denver. So don't listen to Jeff. It's going to be an absolute classic. Expect the unexpected. Let's finish off talking of absolute classics. Monday Night Football is the Indianapolis Colts at the Tennessee Titans. This could very well be Jacoby Brissett against Matt Cassel. I'm taking Tennessee.
If it is.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, Tennessee, oh boy, they would have get that ship righted pretty quick. Or, you know, they're gonna be in trouble to win the division. That was the team I thought had the best chance to win that division.
I've changed my mind already. I'm picking the Colts.
They've got to win this game. And I'm really worried about with Matt Cassel if they're good enough.
Yeah,
I really wonder if they're good enough.
Yeah, I'm going to pick the Colts, Jeff.
But I'm gonna take Tennessee, because I think the Titans know this is it right here. They have to win this football game and get Mariota back. And then, you know, get the ship right. Because right now they have not played very well the last couple of weeks.
All right, let's just take a couple of quick questions out of the mailbag to finish off. And no, I don't have them in front of me. Let's see if I can get some. Let's go with... I'm trying to find some good ones. So, do the Giants... This is from Graham Parrish. Do the Giants reset after this season, or do they stick with Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese? From Graham Parrish. Jeff, I spoke to Peter King on Sunday night. He said the Giants aren't a hot seat kind of team. They won't make a change in season, but it's hard to see where Ben McAdoo sticks around if they've already matched their loss total from a year ago.
Yeah, I think there's just too much. There's been too much said about how good they were going to be, and about there's been too many issues with the team and, you know, discipline and, you know, part, like we've said this a bunch, part of that job is looking like you should have that job. And every time I see Ben McAdoo, I don't get the feeling that there's a guy. You know, like when you saw Coach Vermeil, or you saw Bill Parcells, or you saw,
right,
you know, he just doesn't look the part. Now, he may be great in the locker room and in the meeting room and all that other stuff. But at some point, I can't believe that he is, because his demeanor just doesn't have, he just doesn't have the head coaching demeanor.
No. Jeff, well, you hear that. I've met him, and I've spoken to him, you know, off camera and on camera, and he doesn't have that kind of demeanor. You're right. He just doesn't. It's not, He wasn't kind of comfortable in that situation. Now, I know he was a young head coach and maybe not used to the media side of it, but I'll just give you an example of where I think he maybe hasn't sort of stamped his authority on this team. You know, there's a lot of talk about ill discipline, you know, in terms of the Giants with the whole celebrations with the kick in there, all of the kind of things that have gone on. And I think it's hard for him to maybe stamp down. It's hard for a coach to stamp his authority on somebody of the caliber of Odell Beckham Jr. But early in the season, their rookie tight end, Evan Engram, scored a touchdown and he got flagged for grabbing his crotch. And I thought, there's your perfect person to come down on.
Yeah, like Jimmy, got a rookie.
Yeah, like Jimmy Johnson used to do, right? You make an example of the rookie, but send a message to the rest of your team. And he didn't even do that, Jeff.
Yeah. I think that, you know, you can do that. You can have a million different personalities, right? I mean, you look at Jim Caldwell, for example. Here's a guy who goes into a team that was notoriously bad for lack of discipline, you know, right? And what was the first thing he did? He cleaned it up. Mm-hmm. And you never see Jim Caldwell rant and rave or scream and all that. He's very quiet, but he has that sense. You have that sense when you're in his presence that this is a guy, right? And I just don't see that. And I think that's why the Giants play the way they play, frankly. Something in there is not right. And I think when Tom was there, when Tom Coughlin was there, you could see the cracks in it starting with the Josh Norman and OBJ fight, that incident and how it was handled. And, you know, he's such a polarizing guy, and he's such a great player. I mean, he has so much ability, but boy, does he bring some baggage.
One last question, Jeff, to finish off, comes from Jim Dale, and this is a good question. This might make a longer segment for another podcast, but he says, is the standard of coaching in the NFL on the decline, given the standard of play and the in-game management of some teams, especially Colts, Bears, Giants? So Jeff, this is a two-part question, but you know, obviously your standard of coaching, there's limitations on how you can prepare players compared to the past, but Jim also references here in-game management. It's probably quite a big statement and a big question about standard of coaching being on the decline, but what's your top-level thoughts, and maybe we will revisit this as well.
I think that's one that you could chew on for a long time. And you know, you mentioned incidents. You know, obviously there have been clock management issues. There have been game management issues. There have been those kinds of things. And I think those things have been forever in the league. Right. I mean, it just, when it's your team particularly, that's when it hurts you the most. But, you know, these guys got to understand, fans got to understand, it is really, really difficult. You know, because everything happens so fast on the sidelines, and the game unfolds, and there's so much pressure. And my concern is, Neil, there's so many guys now with headsets on, right?
Yeah,
that
communication.
And it really struck me the other day, and I'm watching. I see guys there's 12 guys with headsets on. Mm. If they're all talking, how in the world do you get all the information communicated the way it needs to be communicated? So, you know, I think sometimes there's so many layers now in the NFL, so many layers of coaching and so many layers of communication that sometimes it gets lost in all that. And I think that that's a good point. I think he brings up a great question.
We will revisit that for another day, Jeff, because we are out of time for this week. But we will be back to talk about week 6 next week. And then actually we'll be together next week, Jeff.
Yes, we will. We will be in the NFL offices in London doing this next week.
We'll chew over week 6 and then our day out of week 7 at Twickenham. So we'll look forward to that. So until next week, Coach, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.